Stay tuned for the Lynn Show podcast. Today, I'm airing an interview with Beverly and Bob Bartner. Both Beverly and Bob had long careers in business, and Beverly was also a teacher. Although they were both interested in the arts and in all performances, Bob including sports in his interest, it wasn't until they retired that their interest grew into something they wanted to participate in. Listen to them describe the experience of seeing the play Wit when no commercial producer would risk producing it, and how the experience of wanting to support this important theatrical piece turned into not only a passion, but an activity which Bob says has given his life meaning in retirement. These are passionate, charismatic, somewhat self-deprecating, and very interesting people. So hang on, here come the podcast.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down.
The Lynn Show is about being the person you really are. Not the person you think you're supposed to be. Not the person other people are. Not the person someone told you you had to be, or even in many cases, the person someone told you you were. Not even the person you may currently think you are, but the person you really are. Unfortunately, too many children have experiences in their childhood which tells them that something about themselves, something they look like, sound like, think, something they're interested in, is not all right. The demonstration of this brings a consequence which is unpleasant, embarrassing, criticizing, sometimes even traumatic. Children are remarkably flexible, and so many are able to pretend, I'm not that, I don't think that, I don't like that, I don't do that. And this pretense can get so intense, so deeply ingrained, that these children grow into adults who have forgotten, who are in denial for some really essential and important aspects of themselves and their personality. So the Lynn Show is about saying that if this happened to you, it may not be too late to recover what you may have had to deny or lost. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And in this interview with Beverly and Bob Bartner, I have the poster children for what the Lynn Show is about. When you listen to Beverly and Bob, you can hear that they are exactly who they are, that they pursue what has meaning for them, not what someone else thought was interesting or worth supporting, but what they believe, what speaks to them. It's very exciting. And I'm not going to say any more because they can speak quite well for themselves. So here now are Beverly and Bob Bartner. Okay, so I'm here with Beverly Bartner, and I'm explaining to her that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I know that you have given a great deal of your life to the art of theater.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So I only ask one question, and it is, can you tell me the very first time in your life that you were drawn to theater, interested in theater, thought it was compelling, any of that?
Yes, I remember distinctly. I just don't remember the year. I was probably 8, 9 years old, something like that. And my father had taken me to see Tyrone Power.
Ooh.
And Ann Baxter doing a reading of John Brown's Body. And I remember it was in a theater, and it was in the evening, and children didn't go to the theater. I just remember being very, very close. We had excellent seats, and I was looking up. It was right there. I could almost touch him.
Tyrone?
Yeah.
Ooh.
And I was mesmerized by the whole experience. And that sort of made me like theater.
No kidding.
At that time.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So did you think to yourself, this is something I want to have something to do with, or this is intriguing, or nothing
no,
like that?
No, I just enjoyed it. And my dad died when I was young, so the next few times we went to the theater after he'd passed away, it was Radio City Music Hall at Christmas time. Mm-hmm. But when Bob and I married, then we started going together quite a bit, and it became a passion. New York City Ballet, New York Symphony Orchestra, in the opera, we would go all the
pretty
time.
Pretty much anything on a stage.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I liked the spoken art. This is Bob.
Okay, so we have been joined by husband Bob. Oh, I explained to her that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And it's clear that the art to which you guys are giving a great deal of your life is the theater. Yes?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
It has, I guess, for about 20 years.
No, longer than that, because we started going when we first got married. But we weren't bankrolling anything at that point.
Well, I asked Beverly, and so I'm going to ask you, do you remember the first time that the theater, stories, performances, any of that, captured you, appealed to you?
Well, as Beverly said, I mean, we have always been ardent supporters and audience members of most of the art forms for over 50 years. But as I said, what really captured us was a play back in about 1990, which Doug Hughes, the artistic director of Long Wharf Theater, brought to New Haven. The play was called Wit.
Mm.
It's a wonderful play about a female college professor who specializes in the poetry of John Donne, who has stage 4 ovarian cancer. And her opening line in the play is, I die at the end of the play. I don't want to spoil your evening, but I die at the end of the play. We both thought it was wonderful and should have a future life, but no commercial producer would put it on in New York.
Really? Given the history, that's remarkable,
well,
isn't it?
Well, the subject matter, that's what
well,
it was.
But back then, people didn't talk about cancer.
Families hid it.
Yes.
So we wrote a check for $25,000 when we finally found a small 99-seat theater to to that would put it on the second floor and just off Fifth Avenue down in the 20s. Ben Bratley from the Times came, reviewed it, loved it, and we were able to transfer to a real theater off Broadway near Union Square. And we ran for 2 years. A lot of people got to see it. We actually made our $25,000 back and a little profit. And we were hooked on theater as a participatory art form.
Yes. So Beverly remembers virtually the first play she saw and the power of that for her. Did you have an experience like that in your childhood or earlier in your life that set you up in this way?
Well, I'm quite old, and I guess the first Broadway musical I saw was South Pacific with Ezio Penza and Mary Martin. I never forgot that, and it was an incredible experience.
And do you mind if I asked how old you were when you saw that?
I was 18 to 20.
Okay, so you hadn't had exposure to theater before that?
He lived in New Jersey. Broadway was a long way.
Well, I mean, there's community theater, there's high school plays, there's all kinds of
hockey and football.
In my callow youth,
yes.
I was a sports fan and was much more into the New York Giants baseball team and football team and... with my brothers and my father, we were sports fans much more than we were.
Shea Stadium, like that, right? No.
No. Well, I'm still a sports fan, mm-hmm. as Beverly will lament.
She says Shea Stadium. No, I don't think Shea Stadium. What was it? Stadium.
No. Shea Stadium.
Shea Stadium.
No, Polo Grounds.
Polo Grounds. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Before
Shea Stadium.
Before they tore it down.
So. This is kind of interesting to me. So a man with the passion for the active, sports, physical, right?
Yeah.
Is somehow captured first by South Pacific, which is so far, it's so different, isn't it?
Yes.
And then by Wit, which is almost entirely intellectual and emotional,
yes.
not, right? So do you have any idea where that comes from in you? It's kind of an anomaly, no?
I don't know where that falls. I'm sure a lot has to do with Beverly. Beverly doesn't know a touchdown from us. So when I leave the room, I say, tell me what happened. I come back, she has no idea.
I told you, they scored a puck.
Right.
It was a football game I was watching. I wasn't watching it.
Okay, so are you saying that her interests were in the performing arts more than yours?
Yes.
And that...
I dragged them.
That you accompanied her, that you went with her?
She comes from an Italian family. How often was opera on the radio?
Yeah, every Saturday.
They listened to...
Yeah, I forget. What was it? Texaco did,
yes.
And when Tony and I were in college, Saturday afternoon, we were supposed to be studying in our dorms, we would be listening to the opera.
Okay, so the opera then is the real beginning of the interest in the performing arts.
Mm-hmm. For me, because it has three elements.
Yeah.
It has a story.
Mm-hmm.
I love beautiful voices, and I like symphony orchestras.
Ah.
I love to go to the symphony and listen to wonderful musicians playing my favorite. So that was fine with me. I could get all three of them in the opera and costumes to go with it.
That's right. Well, you can get that in musical theater as well.
Yes, that morphed later on into live theater.
Okay, so Wit, I've seen Wit, so I know.
Okay.
It's so
powerful.
Oh my God, and painful.
Yes.
So it's just interesting that it captured you. Hmm. It's not your run-of-the-mill theater piece.
No.
And I'm assuming that was your first venture.
Yes.
Right? And so then did you think, this is fun, we should do it again?
It's easy.
It's easy, right.
And then we did a lot.
You got tricked, right?
Exactly right.
Yeah, we did a lot, really lots.
Yeah, right. How not not dependable.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely a crapshoot.
Yeah, crapshoot. That was what I was looking for. Yeah, right. No, that's exactly what I was looking for. So what did you do next then?
It was a lot of fun with, because there were no commercial producers involved in the group.
That, yes, right.
You know, the Long Wharf people had never produced on Broadway. And, you know, we had one commercial producer that we brought on board to sort of tell us what we should be doing. So I then formed a partnership with a gentleman by the name of Ben Mordecai, who was the vice dean at the Yale School, drama school.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jenkins from Dallas, Texas, who ran the Dallas Summer Theater.
Theaters, yeah.
And gentleman from London who had been the licensing director for Andrew Lloyd Webber in the glory days. Even though all three of them have much more experience, we could not find a commercial success. We did quite a bit of August Wilson, because Ben at Yale had produced a lot of August's early plays.
Well, you weren't looking for very commercial then.
Right.
Feeling our way. Yeah. I mean,
we did some musicals that didn't work. David Henry Wong did a new take on Flower Drum Song.
Oh, yeah.
Which he thought was much more realistic,
mm-hmm.
which didn't work. We did a musical called Brooklyn
yeah.
which didn't work. So we had no success at all.
My God. And here you know, you hit a home run right out of the box.
Right. Right.
This is like somebody who has a hit record, you know, is at 18, who thinks, oh, this isn't so tough.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be.
right. So you just kept going, though. I mean.
I stuck with it. And I met a gentleman.
That was his nighttime job, producing.
Well, basically, they did commercial credit collection. For companies,
but then
he owned a theater in London. He had been producing a long time.
He did Pinter plays.
He basically did plays, not musicals.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he liked a two-hander. You know,
that was his
ideal play.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some reasonable success, nothing big. But through him and with him, I met a lot of people, primarily in London, who knew what they were doing in theater. And so that was the next step.
So what was it?
When did we get success?
What was it first?
Going again for the artistic. I think Sweeney Todd.
Yes, that's right.
Directed by John Doyle with Patty LuPone
on Broadway.
Michael Sabaris with very
stark,
small scale Sweeney, where the actors played the actual musical instruments.
Yes, that was groundbreaking.
Yes.
In fact, they won Tony Awards.
No, we didn't.
Didn't the play? Didn't Sabaris win?
Nope.
No.
Maybe Severus
won, but win.
Patty never forgave them
because they didn't
give her the Tony for that.
Yeah, well, they won everything.
And then, you know, I made some good friendships in London, and two of the partners that I'm still working with, Playful Productions and Sonia Friedman, we did a silly French farce in London called Boeing Boeing.
Oh, yes.
The star of Boeing Boeing was Mark Rylance.
Yeah.
Just left Shakespeare's Globe, and to my knowledge, had never done farce.
We've seen his work in his Shakespearean work. You were in London, called me up, and you said, you're not going to believe who came in to audition for Boeing Boeing. I said, he said, Mark Rylance. I said, Mark Rylance, the Shakespearean actor. What's he going to do? He said, he's fabulous.
He's fabulous. Oh, my God. He can do anything.
He can do anything.
Right, and he can do anything, it turns out. And we were hit in London, and we brought it across to Broadway. And we were hit in New York. We won the Tony.
This is not an an easy play to do if you don't have the perfect timing.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, farce, right. Unless the doors slam and the things, physical farce, which this is, you know, doesn't work without the right timing.
You have to be an expert in the time.
Absolutely right.
Okay, so was Boeing then the start of something else? Or what, it was Sweeney Todd that sort of got you off the ground? Or
it was the start of what has been a successful, very rewarding career producing theater.
Mm-hmm.
Norman Telchin became my partner along that, about that
time.
Yeah,
when his brother passed away.
And he and I have been together since then. So Norman's in his 90s and lives out in Beverly Hills.
And how old is Alice? Alice and I produce
things. She's a little young. I do most of the legwork, and I make the recommendations to them, and we speak every other week on the phone for a couple hours talking about what we might do. And most of what we do is in London, or it starts in London anyway, and eventually come across to Broadway.
So did you say you produced with?
With Alice.
What?
We did three things. We did, the first one was Enron, wasn't it? Yeah.
Did you do Enron?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
And then second one was An Evening with B. Arthur. There was An Evening with Elaine Stritch, Evening with B. Arthur. We were the backers for B. Arthur. And we didn't win. We were nominated, but we didn't win. Elaine Stritch did. But B. Arthur was by far the nicest, the lovely, lovely lady. Oh, Wolf Hall. And that was Hilary Mantel's. Yeah, we did it in London and we brought it to New York.
I saw it on Broadway. It was wonderful.
It was wonderful, yeah.
Okay, so what was your favorite? What was the most comfortable? What was the hardest? What was the something?
Well, I mean, I guess my favorite is the work of Jez Butterworth. We did Jerusalem in London and then brought it to Broadway. And that was with Mark Rylance. And now just closed The Ferryman after a one-year run in London. And it's just a wonderful three-hour play, which when it's over, you think, oh, man, that was about an hour and a half. It has no stars in it. The male lead won an Olivier for it. It won the best new play Olivier, and it's just a great powerful work. And then we also, and Jez wrote The River, where we had Hugh Jackman on Broadway. So Jez's work has been, I think he's a great writer, and it's been just wonderful. And it's the kind of work that doesn't work anymore on Broadway, but we're bringing The Ferryman this fall, so we'll find out again.
Play.
Can you tell me what it's about?
Sure. The Ferryman is the story about an Irish family who own a small farm, and it's set during harvest, and it's after the Troubles in Northern Ireland, but relates back to the period of the Troubles. But it's a sprawling family drama that has every emotion in it. It's funny, it's sad, it's there's violence, there's love, everything, the whole spectrum.
It's such a human story.
Emotion. I tell people, it's like August Osage County, but set in Northern Ireland rather than out in Oklahoma. I think that's where Osage County was set.
When do you think it'll come?
Well, it's coming in October. It opens on Beverly's birthday on Broadway this October.
I'm assuming this is the major thrust of your lives now. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, because we don't work.
It's certainly the major thrust of my life. It's what I do. I don't know if that's fair to say about Beverly. She's involved in everything, but, you know, I mean, she's on the board of the Metropolitan Opera, so to some extent, the theater gets competition, from the Metropolitan
Opera. We also have Come From Away.
Oh, my God. Oh,
and we have a little bit of Harry Potter.
I don't know if you follow Sonia Friedman, but Sonia, I think, is the best theater producer in the world, and we have been partners with her
20 years ago.
She wasn't recognized by Time magazine as one of the 100 most influential people in the world, and she was still a great producer. So Harry Potter and the Cursed Child comes out of Sonia's producing efforts.
It's very exciting, though, right?
Yeah, it is. So she and I had a very good friend in New York, Stuart Thompson, and he had gotten Sonia and I involved in Mean Girls. So when he died, Sonia basically took over as the only person who knew anything about really doing theater. You know, Lauren Michaels and Tina Fey had never written for theater. And, you know, so we have Mean Girls running on Broadway and in the competition for the Tony. And we got 12 Tony nominations.
Wow.
But I think everybody, we're all resigned to the fact that the band's visit, which seems to is a continuation of these small musicals. They're good. I mean, they're fine, and they seem to capture the heart of the Tony voters.
Well, New York is really was always a musical town.
Well,
where London is more good theater.
Well, I guess Mean Girls is more musical than The Band's Visit.
Yeah, but no.
But
it should resonate because it's true. It's a big problem.
I don't know either one, so can you tell me a little bit?
I think The Mean Girls is an adaptation of the movie of the same name that Tina wrote in 1984, which is about how teenage girls in high school being very mean to other girls.
Yeah, terribly mean.
It's very interesting because a year before, Apple came out with first iPhone, and it's basically at the dawn of the social media network and the internet. So bullying is as bad as ever, but it's taken on a completely different form now. It's all social media where the bullying is done by the girls.
Yeah.
So she was clever enough with Sonia's encouragement to adapt
modernize it.
The script to reflect that change. Yeah. And it's very good.
It's very timely. You continually hear stories of
Absolutely.
This kid committed suicide because it was bullied on
It's almost
that, right?
epidemic proportions.
It is. It definitely is.
But, so working with Sonia is a real joy. We have a new play that just is closing. It closed in May and transferring into the West End this fall, called The Inheritance. If you haven't heard it,
no.
it's by an American author called Matthew Lopez. You know the book Howard's End?
Yes.
He used that framework for his play. It's about the gay community in New York after the AIDS epidemic.
Mm.
And it'll come to Broadway after.
Yeah,
regardless of whether we think we can make money or not, it'll come to Broadway. I doubt we'll make money. I think in the arc of things that we do, we shouldn't lose a lot of money. We can't afford to lose a lot of money. So we have to break even, or make a dollar. But within there, I like to do some things I know are going to lose money. I know they're not going to make a lot of money. because you want to keep the art form alive. And you know, if you do only sure things, it gets very boring and people don't come.
You'll be watching tap dancing all the time. See, if you go to London, there are just so many wonderful plays because drama is their thing.
I mean, I guess it all starts because new work thrives in London and is much more evident because it costs a fraction to do something in London. So if you have a wonderful piece of new theater that, you know, no one knows the author, and you can give it a try, you know, you can do it and not go broke. The importance of the arts is demonstrated here in Sarasota.
Yes.
But I don't know if it's really fully appreciated how much better this community is because the arts pervade it, you know, in all of their forms and at all levels. You know, and I don't think you can, it's hard to find a major city in America that like this.
I have one more question, and it is, would you say something about what it's like for you to have spent all this time creating theater, supporting theater, trying to keep a certain kind of theater alive?
Frustrating? No. You know, I've never thought of it in that context, but what I would have to say is, for me, it is my life, my passion, right. But you know, when I worked and had a long business career, I worked very hard. So now I'm retired. I don't work anymore, but I don't play golf. I don't go to the beach. I don't play tennis. So this has basically kept me alive in my retirement because it keeps my mind completely occupied and involved.
Things.
And it has become my mission. So, I've had the good fortune to add the Oslo World Theater to that dimension because it's not London, it's not Broadway, but I think the Oslo Repertory Theater, Michael Edwards, does very good work. And in a small and intimate scale, you can get much more involved in it. I think that's one of our joys of being here in Sarasota and of my life at the moment is being involved in this little theater here in Sarasota.
I mean, maybe you can't answer this, but do you have some influence on the plays that they choose?
Michael Edwards selects the plays. I've had a significant hand in what he does in the sense that I have introduced him to a lot of people in New York and London, and in most recent seasons there have been productions that he has brought here right from Broadway or from London, which has been very rewarding for the theater and for me.
Yes, absolutely. And for Sarasota, absolutely.
So I think the most important thing they do to perpetuate theater is the Shakespeare tour in the fall. Have you ever seen one of those?
Yes, I have.
Where they cut them down to 45
minutes.
Yes,
they're wonderful.
Well, now they're doing some stuff.
And there's nothing wrong with the stuff they do at the Selby either.
That's nice.
It's wonderful.
Last year was the first time, I think,
yeah,
they did
right,
it. And then
right,
this
it's
year.
Wonderful.
That opens it up to more.
And also the last show they do every year is a children's thing,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Beverly started that.
Did
we
you?
We brought in the Hetty Feather. We brought that whole English
one.
Troupe in.
That
was what we did for the theater.
You know, we wrote a check because that's a difficult financial slot for the Oslo.
Right.
The
people
end of
have gone
year.
Home.
Yeah, that was.
And, you know, Michael wanted to do family theater. So
right.
We helped make, we got the English producer of Hetty Feather to bring it across, and we got
with
the
theater set
to
and
do
everything.
It. So that to me is the answer to your question. You know, I believe if you retire and do nothing, you die, really. You lose interest in life. You get bored. Theater has been my passion.
It's creating something.
And has, you know, kept me stimulated and involved
essentially raison, huh?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. But you still have to educate people. I think it's very important to keep live art or theater going. A freedom of speech issue.
Hopefully we'll keep the art alive a little bit longer.
Okay, I'm not taking any more of your time. Okay.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
It was fun.
As I said in the opening, I play interviews with people who make their living or their life with an art because it is my hope that when you listen to them, you are inspired to ask yourself, is this how I feel about my life? Can I say that what I do with my life, the way I spend my life, is my life? That it reflects the deepest part of me? Well, if that is not true for you, if you had to leave something behind, if you suspect that there was an interest or a way of being or a quality that you wanted, maybe had, but had to suppress, maybe never was aware of, but hope you have, and you want to talk to me about that, you can find me at my website. That is thelynshow.com, thelynneshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. So as always, I hope you got something from this show that you can use, something that inspired you, something that encouraged you to look at your life through a different lens, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. That I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten